Welcome, one and all, to the Moon Knight Podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Welcome, gentle travelers, to the realm of the Duat. The Moon Knight Podcast by Fantastic Geek for Episode 5, Asylum, is brought to you by a creepy calf filled with dead bodies, Crawley not included.
Pete, like the sands through the hourglass, so moves time. News just in the last couple days that the MCU schedule is on the move. Specifically, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is swapping spots with the Marvels. So that's now Quantumania on February 17th and the Marvels, that's February 17th, 2023. And the Marvels, July 28th, 2023. So a little swap them there.
Not the swap we kind of thought we heard could be coming, that with Black Panther Wakanda Forever still apparently due in November of this year, though the scheduling issues they've had there was a lot of thought might switch with the Marvels and it would slot Black Panther 2 to the 5-year anniversary month, February 2023 of its original film. So yeah, this had heard some stuff that Ant-Man was running ahead. Okay, they do that. I still don't know if we're definitely done with the moves. Could you get a second swap where that goes to November of this year and Black Panther shifts again to February? We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, in the more immediate future, Pete, our schedule for this upcoming week, the golden hour is ahead of us, affecting a number of the shows we podcast. So here's the one-time-only swap that we're going to do. We will be talking Moon Knight Episode 6 next Friday, May 6th, that is. We'll be doing Star Trek Picard on Saturday, May 7th. So in the case of both those shows, they're moving up a day. We'll talk the Strange New Worlds premiere on our traditional Star Trek Sunday slot. And then we will be podcasting Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness on Monday, May 9th.
Speaking of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Matt, you and I will be attending the red carpet premiere in New York City tonight.
Yeah, super excited to get that invite, to be there. I can't wait to see Star Trek on the small screen, on the big screen. Can't wait to see that whole red carpet experience there, the proper Manhattan red carpet being rolled out and so forth. So an exciting adventure ahead.
Being close to the production in Toronto, hop, skip, and a jump for the cast. Interested to see how many wind up strutting down that red carpet there. And how many episodes they might give us. They've not told us that. I know that two have circulated amongst the cast, but no one of the public has seen them yet. So super excited to do that. And again, we are podcasting that over on Strange New Worlds, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek. Continuing on with the Star Trek, we will be doing Picard 209 tomorrow, Sunday. Might be a little bit of a delay on that, given that we are attending the premiere, but it will be available on Sunday on our ordinary day. And Matt, we did a little something back in the Marvel Universe this week, did we not?
We did. We properly inaugurated our Ms. Marvel podcast, giving a preview towards that summertime series. Pete, it's amazing how many balls are in the air. Hopefully we are juggling them all aptly. Your Star Trek universe, your MCU, your Star Wars there in the ether, never far away and so forth. But certainly exciting times around the horn. For now, though, it's time for our episode Rockap.
Following our Marvel Studios card, Matt, we are inside a cavernous environment flooding with water, where a young boy screams for help, which dissolves into a woman telling someone it is their fault before Talaret screams in the psychiatric hospital at Mark and Steven.
We then cut to Mark crying out to the Dr. Harrow character, who Pete, for part of my notes, before he was properly named Dr. Harrow, I was calling him Dr. Artie, which I rather liked just because he's so personable. I feel like you could tell Dr. Artie what really is troubling you, and it would be okay. But we are told, Dr. Artie claims, we are at Putnam Medical in Chicago, and he's seeing Mark swinging from that reality to the fantasy of being a superhero. Mark tells Dr. Artie that he isn't a real doctor, but Dr. Artie says he sure feels like one. And indeed, Pete, he feels like he took the bus to get to Putnam Medical today.
A little suspicious, Matt. How many doctors do you know that ride the bus?
Well, look, I feel like Dr. Artie is, you know, he lives in whatever the kind of Brooklyn area is of Chicago. Like, Dr. Artie's like, yeah, last night I went to the cheese shop and had some artisanal cheese. And now I'm wearing a shirt that was handmade by the loom lady. So I could buy it. I could buy Dr. Artie, well, within the world of Dr. Artie. Now, Pete, if you were saying, let's step out of the proposed reality here and say, do I think that this is Arthur Harrow, villain, you know, forcing through some sort of villainous vibe, I would say yes.
It's such a credit to the show that we're still playing this guessing game of what is real and what is imagined. Mark told Dr. Harrow that he was in a place like his office, except it was in Egypt, and he was with a rhinoceros?
No, a hippopotamus. There are differences, Pete. We're not Philistines here.
That's right, a talking hippopotamus. Sense or nonsense?
Pete, this quickly feels like this persona of Dr. Artie is much like the intelligent gentleman who's had one too many come 9:30 at night, swilling his beer. Sense or nonsense? So profound. Mark thinks nonsense. Dr. Artie says the struggling mind will seek to find safe places. It's an organizing principle. This could be a castle, a maze, or a library. Why, even a psychiatric ward. And Dr. Artie finds the new animal character interesting. Very, very
so do
interesting. Indeed.
So that it could break down the walls between Mark and Steven, and they might finally understand. It's Chekhov's hippo. But before Mark got upset, he was telling Harrow about a little boy. Mark, or maybe someone else, Matt, thanks Dr. Harrow and tells him he feels really great. Gets up, grabbing the glass pyramid on his desk. Harrow buzzes the little button he's got there for the orderlies. The speech and demeanor of the character standing in front of him clutching this glass pyramid is different. He tells Harrow he feels like $1 million, never felt so good. He's going to see himself out when Bobby and Billy come in and restrain him. He tells Harrow that he's going to release that monster and he's going to destroy everything. Harrow urges them to be gentle with him, that he's not his enemy. And Bobby injects Mark with a sedative in his neck and his eyes go back.
I'd like to reflect for a moment on the luscious performance by Ethan Hawke here as the Dr. Harrow version of the character. This Dr. Artie has nuance and also not a lot of time to show his particulars off. And I think Ethan Hawke, who I would suspect is used to, you know, crafting a movie-long performance, has this scene to kind of sell us to whatever degree that Dr. Artie is real or from a reality, that sort of thing. Regardless, though, Pete, you mentioned how Mark or someone else has been dosed out, and we cut to the hallway that we ended with in the last episode. Stephen and Mark, I'm sure it's Stephen and Mark this time, Pete, are talking with the hippo. Are they twins? Stephen says yes, sort of. They're told that they're also quite dead. Yes, says Stephen, we died. Time for the hippo to check the papyrus. Okay, she's ready for her lines. Welcome, gentle travelers. Welcome to the Duat, the Egyptian underworld, which makes her, of course, Taweret, our guide in the afterlife. Mark, however, doubts that this is the afterlife. Taweret says this is an afterlife. You know, there's all sorts of versions, like that gorgeous ancestral plane, which you could see on Black Panther, Marvel's What If, and if we're to keep the schedule, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, later this calendar year. But Pete, the reference to other planes of existence in the MCU aside, what happens next?
Taweret, this goddess of women and children to serve as their guide here, explains that the Duat's true nature is impossible for the human mind to comprehend. So they may perceive the realm as something more easily recognizable. A psych ward's a first for her, but they can roll with it. Stephen asks why a psychiatric hospital, and Mark says, because they're insane. Talking hippo, dead bird, Stephen's outside his body now, and the afterlife. He's come around to what Dr. Harrow said about the organizing principle. If he goes through the doors, there's just going to be a bunch of patients, and Crawley's probably going to yell, bingo, oh my God.
Yes, instead, a luscious shot of the Ship of the Dead, blues and golds kind of raining in the color palette here as they sail to Awaru, the Field of Reeds. Taweret says that if the heart balances, then indeed they will make it to the Field of Reeds. She grabs out their hearts, plural, and it worked. Look at that. Their chests didn't blow open. Pete, we all have opening night jitters, I suppose. Time for the hearts to be weighed on the scale of justice against the feather of truth. And if they don't balance, it's overboard, pulled down, frozen in the sand. And there's the proposal made here by Mark to perhaps kill the hippo and steal the boat.
This is if they don't get thrown overboard, where the dead will drag them down and they will remain forever frozen in sand. No unbalanced souls on Taweret's boat. Them's the rules. Fingers crossed for them. So Mark tells Stephen he doesn't care what she says. There's no way they're ending up down there. As they look over the side, they're not going to the Field of Reeds either. Stephen asks what he's proposing, and Mark wants to kill the hippo and steal the boat. Taweret calls them over since the scales won't balance, and she does not have a papyrus card for that. She picks up the hearts and says they aren't full, even though she's a goblet half full kind of gal, but it's like they feel incomplete. Without balanced scales, Duat will eventually claim their souls. So Stephen asks her if she has any other suggestions. She says the boat contains all of a life's memories. She doesn't know what they're hiding, but her advice is to get in there and show each other the truth to balance their scales before they arrive at the Field of Reeds, where their souls will be destroyed.
Why, Pete, that's a handy story clock in an episode where I'm not quite clear as to the nature of reality, the nature of these deities, where they are in planes of existence. All I know is this: balanced scale or dead. Okay,
it's effective. Story.
With that, they step back into the asylum. Layla is name-checked. She might be in trouble, but she's not here. Mark proposes again to kill Taweret, or maybe not quite kill, just, you know, take over. Stephen, however, says to play the game. They start to look down some hallways. One is of Moon Knight in the now iconic bathroom fight. Another is Mr. Knight with Khonshu as they turn back time, the knight streaked in scars and all of that. However, they go back to yet another memory, one that is new to us. Indeed, new to Steven. Mark remembers A Street. We certainly don't. They hear a boy calling for help. Steven goes down yet another another door. They're in... Pete, what international visitors to our podcast might suppose we in America call a cafe-editorium. they see dummies. No, maybe dead bodies. Yes, definitely, definitely scary kind of dead bodies. That one from Dubai. That one from Gabon. That one from New York. Pete, it's Mark's Red Ledger.
Yeah, this cafeteria here where the dead sit with Ushtapdis on the tables there and the scales of justice sway. Steven asks if he killed them, and Mark said they were criminals, murderers, predators, the worst of the worst. Khonshu wanted punished. It's what he meant by protecting the travelers of the night. Steven asks if he remembers each one, and Mark tells him to try taking a life and seeing how quickly he can forget it. Mark admits he kept wishing he'd fail and one would kill him instead. The healing ended up being a curse, and Steven points out the scales are slowing down, and then suddenly there's a boy in the corner of the room, and Steven asks Mark why he's there in a room filled with people that Mark killed. He tells Steven not to go near him. Steven chases after him into the hall and another set of doors, which lead to a backyard that Steven locks Mark out of. There, Steven sees his mother manning the grill. Who's hungry? Roro?
It's clear as the scene unfolds that Mark is the big brother. Indeed, the two are going to go play, laters, gators, and so forth. Pete, that's a reference to an earlier line as used in this show. Steven follows the two boys into the woods as they play Dr. Steven Grant and Sidekick. It starts to rain, and they continue into a cave. Steven follows young Mark and Randall, a.k.a. Roro, into the cave, not before stepping on a bird's skeleton. Rather evocative of Khonshu, of course. Steven calls out to the lads, get out of there! Intercut is Mark trying to find a way into the garden room, the door to the backyard. Steven goes deeper and deeper into the cave as it fills with water. Mark, in the hospital, comes face-to-face with Mom, as Steven stares after the boys, and it's clear that there's a risk of drowning here. And young Mark calls for Roro.
Mark calms himself that it's just a memory. He hears the screaming and then looks in another door and sees a Jewish family sitting Shiva. Randall's photo is displayed on a table as he enters, and Mom is grief-stricken. Dad goes and sits beside her. Steven is there, and he is sopping wet. Wendy, the mother, says she wants her Roro back. And young Mark is on the stairs in a suit and tie, and his mother asks him what he's doing there, telling him he was supposed to keep Randall safe. Mark tells Steven to go. Wendy tells young Mark he let Randall drown, and it's all his fault. And he runs upstairs, Steven chasing after him.
Steven runs upstairs, hearing Dad calling for Mom. We're gonna blow out the candles for Mark, but Mom is not coming. It'll just be Dad and young Mark this year, so blow out your candles. Big Mark now calls from upstairs, and Steven runs up. Then it is a later birthday, feeling very similar in its dour state. Mark is having cake, and Mom is drunk and despondent. She should have known Mark would do something like this, and young Mark runs upstairs. Steven follows into the room but gets pulled back by Big Mark. The men see that teen Mark is now ready to walk, and you should have tried to fix this, Dad.
He's got a backpack, Mark does, and a duffel bag. his father Elias begging him to please come inside, saying she will get help. They will fix it. But Mark tells him it's dad that's supposed to fix it. Why hasn't he? But his father cannot lose another son. Mark tells Stephen that's enough, tackling him. Then suddenly they're on the sand at night. There's an overturned vehicle smoldering. Stephen wonders where they are now and says, Harrow said Mark was a merc, that he killed hostages. There's bodies littering the ground here. Mark asks him if he believes that. Stephen wouldn't put it past him. And Mark says that it turns out going AWOL in a fugue state got him discharged from the military. He didn't have a ton of options after that, so he went to work for hire for his old commanding officer, Bushman. The job was to raid an Egyptian tomb. Bushman changed the plan and called for no witnesses, and Mark couldn't live with that. Stephen asks if the man with the fuchsia scarf is Dr. Elfouli, Layla's father. Mark tried to get them all away, but we didn't make it, he says. Stephen asks what happened to Mark. They follow sand tracks to the step of Khonshu's tomb, where bloodied Mark puts a gun to his chin, and Khonshu tells him it's a waste.
Indeed, Khonshu feels the pain inside of Mark. He introduces himself properly, Khonshu does, in search of a warrior to be the hands and eyes of vengeance, someone to eradicate the worst, those who deserve it. So, dying, bleeding Mark, choose death or life. Khonshu, at this early stage, sees a fractured mind before him. Our Mark, or perhaps Stephen, steps forward even as the scales slow. Stephen says that Mark was taken advantage of. The idea of protecting travelers in the night and bringing vengeance to evildoers. Flashback adult Mark swears yes. With that, the scales look balanced. And a great moment as wounded Mark rises as Moon Knight. With that, the men go to the top of the boat and see many souls being judged, sent back before their own time. Pete, the tension now increased.
Yeah, very reminiscent of the between the purple light and the things falling there, like the meteors on Lamentis from Loki. This is bad, evil, even, Tauret tells us. Mark says this is Harrow. Stephen says this is why they need to go back. Even if Tauret could send them back there, they'd just be returning to a body with a bullet in it, unable to heal. Stephen asks if she can send word to Layla and help them free Khonshu. Tauret asks if they really want to be with Khonshu again. Seems like they didn't want to be around him before. Mark says he's their only shot. Tauret says, what the heck? Osiris is not going to like this, but his gate is the only path back. She turns the boat broadly and tells them to go back inside, and they don't have long to get those Chekhov's scales balanced.
Again, I marvel, no pun intended, but I marvel at how, I won't say confusing, how expansive the scope is in this episode, but still they are returning to basic keystones of story clock, ways to measure success, and so forth. Back within the story, Stephen asks about the bedroom that Mark did not want them to go in. Mark proposes that maybe they don't need to go back in. Mark will open up because Mark knows what is in that room. Don't make us go there again. It's not worth it. But I guess also speaking of story clocks, Stephen says that all is about to be lost. If Harrow succeeds, then all those people will die. Layla dies. This will all be on Mark. Mark says, you can't hit me. He hits his head, and we cut to Mark back in the hospital with Dr. Artie, and Mark is hitting his head. Really great kind of jump there. Doc, didn't you inject me with something? No. We can't involuntarily sedate patients nowadays. Mumble unless absolutely necessary. Mwahaha, my goons out in the hall. Dr. Harrow is so proud of Mark. He's been reliving these painful memories. Here, have a sip of water. I'm really proud of you. And Mark looks into the water to his reflection. Of course, Pete, we know reflections in this show have a way of allowing Mark and Steven to talk to one another and transform and so forth.
Does Mark think that he created Steven to hide all the awful things he feels he's done in his life? Or does he think Steven created Mark to punish the world for what his mother did to him? Can he remember? There's only one way to know. He's going to have to open up to Steven. Can he do that? In the room, young Mark slides things off his desk and sits against a dresser. Older Mark is there watching. There's a Cubs pendant in the background, even the framed fish drawing from earlier at the barbecue that Randall was making. Steven is suddenly behind Mark, his head peering out. And this is Steven's room, he says. He remembers some things, but he doesn't remember this. And knocking at the door there, young Mark says that's not his mom. Mom tells Mark to open the door. And he repeats again and again that it's not his mom. His eyes roll back. There's a mirror by him. And then in a British accent here, bloody hell, look at the state of this place. We see Stephen now in the mirror observing young Mark / Stephen. Better sort this out before Mum sees it. Mom is still on the other side of the door telling him to open it. He is grabbing the pencils and the markers, Matt, to put them in the caddy there, his organizing principle. Steven and Mark watch this, Steven seeing the scales and peering at the Tomb Buster poster. Mark made Steven up. And Mom continues banging to be let in. She finally busts in. She tells him, grabbing a belt, Mark's going to learn to listen as he organizes these markers. She asks him why she has to make her do this. And then Mark pulls Steven away, but he wants to see what she did. And the sound of her laying hands on her son can be heard.
This is what Steven was created for, to not see the bad stuff. Big Steven hits Mark. This was all a lie. The truth is that their mother hated them, made their life a living hell. But Steven lived with the idea that Mom loved him, was kind, and was still alive. That is, of course, news to Steven. She's not alive now. Dad had called about her Shiva, and Steven started to spiral. With that, Steven appears with Dr. Artie, splashing himself, Steven, with water. Is this a test? What is this place? Asks Steven. What is this? He denies that Harrow is his doctor, denies this reality, the haircut, the mustache. Pete, very Ned Flanders.
Yes, also in the Disney family now here, no doubt the ability to use that. Harrow asked Mark to open up. Steven says Mark lied to him. Quite nosy. When Steven first came in here, Harrow thought he'd never acknowledge Mark after his mother passed. That's not true. That's not true, Steven says. Is Harrow having a laugh as well? Mother is alive. Harrow says he must be mistaken here. Why don't they call her? The hospital has her number on file. We'll just get Dylan to do that. Yes, call Mrs. Grant, please, Dylan. Steven says, no, she screens her calls. She's afraid of the tele salespeople. Stephen asks Harrow, please don't do this. After the ringing here, Harrow gets her, and Stephen says that his mother does not exist, that she is dead.
The weight of this scene, Pete, is being borne again by Ethan Hawke, who finds himself in the position of not the focus of the scene, of the less flashy role in the scene and so forth. But I would argue that the fulcrum upon which there's this, you know, manic back and forth that Oscar Isaac is sharing us, there's just something fundamentally inauthentic about Dr. Harrow's performance. Again, not Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke doing a great job showing that Dr. Harrow is almost completely believable. There's just something there with... I can't point to how he picks up the phone or how he says, yes, Mrs. Grant, but there's just something there from Ethan Hawke, the great pro, that makes us not buy into it almost on a subconscious and instinctual level. But ultimately here, the memory coming back of the Shiva for mom, for seeing dad older now. Mark ultimately regarded the house from across the street, pouring a drink with a flask, kind of, you know, somewhat toasting through the window, somewhat, angrily, telling off without words. He walks off crying. Mark, we see, breaks down in the street and sees Stephen. Then he kind of fugues, and he is Stephen, who suddenly is in a mysterious street. Where is he? Oh, bollocks. Lost again, Mum, as he calls her. Totally lost again. What a Muppet he is. Also part of the Disney universe. He walks across the street, noticing cars are on the wrong side of the street. Now, Pete, some would say that there's even more layers of mystery going on here as he's figuring out the particulars on the street.
So remember, earlier in the episode, we had seen this scene from the side. Okay. A car, Mark, Stephen standing next to it. A lot of people immediately said, car, that's Jake Lockley. Okay. Jake Lockley is a taxi driver. To see this scene from the other perspective and hear both Mark and Stephen seeing an altar, okay, who has a little bit more stubble on his face than we've ever seen, which actually changes mid-scene. Was it a pickup? Was it intentional? We don't know. Okay. But a lot of people, again, thinking that this might be Jake Lockley. There is a taxi that very clearly drives by in at least two shots. So is this a way of telling us, hey, here's this third alter, Jake Lockley?
Pete, I know it's not the theory segment. There's no way that the TV Adventures of Moon Knight concludes next week, end of series. There's surely must be more coming. But Pete, time is a fickle thing, because what we are seeing was 2 months ago. No, not for us in the real world. But it is when their lives started to bleed into each other. Mark is told by Stephen that this is not his fault. Mark was a child who made a mistake. There's a moment of pause, then the ground shakes. The ship has stopped. They are at the gates of Osiris, and Towerette says the journey has come to an end. The scales aren't balanced. The Duat will claim your souls, and the story clock says time's up.
She's never seen the gates to the world above so close. Mark asks how they open them, but Towerette says she is sorry. The scales never balanced. Their journey must end. She can't stop the inevitable. She was really rooting for them too, but the unbalanced souls of the Duat must now claim theirs. A hand erupts from the sand below as the boat passes by. Another sandy hand closes and climbs in to the boat. One has a knife. Stephen tells Mark they don't look friendly. Mark tells Stephen to hide. We have Gabon, New York, Dubai, these are the victims that Mark has dispatched who come and fight. There's punches. Suddenly, Mark ends up strangled, punches a guy's face out with sand, yet he continues to try to kill him. Steven tries to get Towerit to help, who turns the boat to shift them over. One of the guys hits Mark with a bat, and he's down. But wait, Steven realizes if Mark is also Steven, he's got this too, which means he can help. So as they're dragging him over, Steven attacks, grabs the bat, and then the two there that are attacking him, he turns them into sand. That's a sick in the cricket.
You might think everything is okay, but there's one last baddie. Then Steven takes him out too. But wait, Pete, there still is one last baddie. Steven goes to save Mark. And it is Steven who goes overboard into the sand. We see Steven running on the sand, a moment of hope here, but he is slowed. He is starting to turn to sand. We see that the boat is going on. Steven now fully claimed by the sand dunes. An oddly fitting moment, Pete, since we first met Steven ahead of all the other forms of this character. Now it revealed he's not the real one. Now he's presumably taken back. But the scales are balanced, and Mark is in the field of reeds, everything golden and beautiful as we head to the credits.
Let's sink our teeth into some Sphinx stumping riddles.
So let me again double down on what I said earlier. First of all, my expectation is the finale is close to, if not in excess, if not in well in excess of an hour next week. I would like
to... I'm really going to have to pour cold water on that for you.
Yeah, you will. Why?
Because not only do I know the title, I know the length.
And it's less than an hour?
Yes.
Well, then I will quadruple down. Surely this can't all be resolved in a shorter than not episode, given that I think that we have very, very strong suspicions about what is reality in this episode, what is another level of reality, and what is some sort of Dr. Artie, false nature. But I would have a difficult time saying, yes, they resolve everything in 35 minutes. That's my number, not yours.
It's not 35 minutes. I can tell you that. It's not 35 minutes. I hope you're right. I hope there's a second season of the show. I have no indication to this point that there won't be. Will that be the only post-credit scene we get out of this? And the Moon Knight will return in season two, Loki style. But here's the thing, Matt. We're coming up on a year since Loki season one, and they've not shot frame one of Loki season two. Yes, Tom Hiddleston is busy. He's getting married. Congratulations. But if they're going to go to season twos on these shows, you hope they turn them around a little bit more quickly than 2 years later.
Particularly since there is third-party data to suggest that Loki, at least in terms of first week viewing, Loki was by far the biggest show that Marvel Studios has released on Disney Plus, with the understandable asterisk of Hawkeye's numbers included Hawkeye 101 and 102. So when you like divide that in half, Loki is like 30 to 40% greater than the average, and all the other ones kind of hover in the same average. So surely they must do, continuing seasons on some of these shows. And it can't all just be one and done.
I mean, we've never been told that Hawkeye won't come back, although they're shooting Echo right now. There was another cast member announced today. But I mean, we'll see. It just remains to be seen at this point. But like I said, I know the title, I know the length.
So, Pete, what is your take? Is the Dr. Artie portion of the story existing in an afterlife, in a mental incursion? What is that? I mean, I'm assuming that everything else that we've seen can be easily and ultimately explained as either the Tarouette portion of the story, or like Marvel's Moon Knight, as shown jumping from rooftop to rooftop, is real and can show up in other shows and movies, and who knows, maybe in Doctor Strange 2 next week, all of that. So where is Dr. Artie's asylum?
I can take it on face value that this is some sort of in between place. What I'm having a hard time reconciling is how, at the end of the episode, does Mark go from leaving Steven frozen in the stands to suddenly putting on the suit and fighting Harrow, possibly Amit inside of him there, and some big epic conclusion.
Particularly since I think we are meant to accept the field of reeds as real, another plane of existence and so forth. But isn't Mark dead at the end of the episode? Indeed, as dead as one can be in the field of reeds slash the ancestral plane. Of course, we saw Black Panther T'Challa move back and forth from the one to the other. So I'm certainly not saying it's a one-way door, a la the Christian notion of heaven and all of that. But again, that's part of the reason why I can't imagine like anything less than a supersized finale. Mark is dead. Steven is dead. I'm certainly, again, not saying that either or both can't be undone, but it's like they've gone as far as they can go, and yet we still have another episode and plenty of plot to resolve.
This vacillation that Dr. Harrow refers to, I think the first hint in this episode of the Jake altar. But then, even within this afterlife portion idea, is Dr. Harrow really a real doctor? As I asked before, what real doctor takes the bus to work? There are people who have taken a real hard look at the diploma. Is it phony? The details there,
It
not
certainly looked kind
signed.
of school play propped, prop worthy. Like
We
somebody
know
worked.
that Marvel's so much better than that. I mean, the Dr. Stephen Grant, the Tomb Buster videotape, Matt, on the spine has details about, Timely Atlas Production Company. Okay, so now proto Marvel comics companies exist in the MCU.
Which is a little weird to get one's head wrapped around, but then you could say, oh, it's just a detail, and just because Atlas Comics evolved out of Timely Comics and became Marvel Comics doesn't mean that's where it's headed, I think. Maybe that's the big reveal, and pull back to a young boy sitting on his living room floor. He's tossed aside his snow globe and now is reading The Adventures of Moon Knight from Atlas Comics, circa 1958, or some really mind-blowing thing like that. Pete, what theory topics do you have?
So when Mark thanks Harrow in the hospital, tells him he feels really great and gets up, grabbing the glass pyramid. He's speaking with a very clearly different voice, and a demeanor. So is that Jake?
Pete, I will return to my old tool Where are we at in the season? Where are we at in the story? I mean, I think there's enough evidence there. I had watched this episode with less of an eye towards the comics knowledge that there are other alters. And of course, I'm aware of it, but that I was kind of watching with eyes that did not have that knowledge, if you will. So my point is this: I noticed the differences, and we've talked many times before about how when you're setting up a twist, things need to be the right kind of sticky. You know, everyone who saw The Sixth Sense the first time noticed something slightly weird about how the wife took the bill at dinner with her husband, and it just stuck enough to be like, there's something weird, but then it moves on. Then when you get the reveal all these years later, spoiler alert for one of the great cinematic twists of all time, that he's been dead all along, Bruce Willis has, and you show that, you say, oh, now I completely understand it. So my point being, Pete, if we find out at some point in the shorter than I would anticipate episode next week that, you know, flash to this, flash to that, oh, we've had multiple instances where the stubble and the accent have caught our ear enough for them to say, thus it is Jake, that's all well and good. It's great storytelling. To me, it's just propped up against, well, if we don't have a super long thing and now we're introducing another character and we need to dispense with some of the characters that we already have, it makes me want to find out what they do next week.
Crawley was named in this episode. We've seen him as the gold man twice, and then he was calling the bingo numbers last week. It was nice to get that name reference in the show proper.
It was, particularly since there's so much that could be confusing in these five episodes, and there's so much that could be off-putting. It's too crazy for me. It's one too many twists. It's one too many instances of things being unclear. But weirdly, to get Crawley named, to have had him present at the end of the prior episode and so forth, one really gets the sense that there is a plan, that there are edges to this story that we are feeling but not necessarily charting out or understanding, and that with Crawley and with everything else, it really is going to be okay.
What do you make, Matt, of the white hearts? I mean, that's not how anatomically they appear. Is it a prop type of thing? Does it have anything to do maybe with alabaster, or that Steven gets frozen later on? I pointed out last week when Layla made the mark in the sand in the tomb that later it looked like it was frozen. I don't know if that's a phenomenon in these tombs, like they're super cold places, that would happen. What do you think?
Well, I would add to the kind of rhetorical questions here. Have they been made so light for production reasons? Like, we're going to have the swirling skies and there's going to be the dark computer-generated boat and all of this. We need to really have it pop against everything else so it's the focus of the shot, even if the camera doesn't center it, or, you know, that sort of thing. Could it even be some weird product of a suit, like, hey, don't forget it's Disney, no blood in the vessel that interacts with all the blood in your body and so forth. I don't know is the answer. I do know this: I saw the spoiler-free social media post that they did before I watched this episode. Before I watched this episode, I saw the spoiler-free post, and I wasn't quite sure what those two things were on the scale being balanced out by the feather there. So let's just say, Pete, I'm glad that my worst fears were not realized.
Well, I knew because of some of our friends on Twitter that those were hearts. Speaking of hearts, Matt, Layla is all right for now, we're told, but she may go on a suicide mission to stop Harrow. She would have seen to have been left in his clutches. I'm going to make the prediction here: she saves the day.
I think that would be fantastic. I think that also we've had the the terrible notion of Layla is the new Moon Knight, is a Moon Knight, as the next servant of Khonshu. We've had that teased in my mind enough times with enough distance. It's not just, you know, a thing that Jake is upset, or pardon me, a thing that Mark is upset about in the second or third episode. Like, again, it's been sustained over time. I think maybe we get that too. Again, I'm just trying to figure out in my head, do we get that as the opening back in the real world? And then part of next week unfolds in finding out how the real world, the main MCU, ties into these other planes. Do we get that at the very end? You know, the triumphant, oh man, the adventure continues in season two or something like that. It's weird to be headed into a season, possible series finale, and knowing kind of defeat Harrow, resolve Stephen Mark conflict, resolve Stephen Mark conflict with Layla. And I think there's a path where you can say, and Harrow is dead. I understand that. But how they're going to meet all these things next week, I have no worldly idea.
Could they return? They showed us rather prominently Khonshu and Mr. Knight spinning the stars back. Might that be a point to where they return?
If I knew exactly what the spinning the stars back was, yes, we saw that it appeared to be, and I will say in a very generic way, it appeared to be global, i.e. it was not a vision in the desert. We had footage of, you know, it's happening over Cairo, you know, downtown, middle of Cairo sort of thing. But was that turning back the image of the stars? Was that turning back time? Could you have it both ways? Could you say, well, it just turned back the image of the night and mumble, mumble, somehow they explained it, but we get to use a similar power to actually go back in time? Again, possible. Many a time travel story that does that well. My kind of larger concern would be, so what are the stakes if you can turn back time? Then that means that you just, you know, every time you turn back time.
Will Khonshu still tell the Moon Knight, Mark, Steven, what to do, or will they reach some sort of balance?
I certainly think there's the possibility for balance. I don't know that you need further incarnations of this character, whether they're, we're going to find out next Wednesday that, you know, season two is revealed, you know, in a post-credit style, or whether it's straight to the movies for Moon Knight. Maybe that's the post-credit scene coming in 2025, Moon Knight the movie. I don't know, but I don't think that you need the conflict. I don't think you need the Bruce Wayne forever changed by the death of mom and dad. I don't know that you need that for Moon Knight to move the character forward. And I think that if you are going to have an end point next week of the series, of the character, of the season, whatever, to have that piece where the total is greater than the sum of the parts, that's really welcoming.
So Mark tells Steven that he went AWOL in a fugue state that got him discharged from the military. Is that yet again an opportunity to go back and flesh out, well, this was Jake as opposed to Steven?
Is there the possibility? Yes. I do think, again, not to return to the structure of the season yet again, if you're going to give me next week Harrow defeated, peace between Steven and Mark, a resolution with Layla, which is fulfilling in a variety of levels, her relationship with the two men so far, you know, blah, 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 her kind of accepting the killer of dad and the truth of all that and so forth, fine. If you then want, and, you know, all the Khonshu stuff as well, and to still have Moon Knight as a hero at the very end, if you then want to say, actually, surprise, it was somebody else who was the bad merc with the good merc, again, it's possible, but I feel like the story is moving away from that, and we got the tragic flashback origin story. I don't know that we're going to dial back to it.
So we had Bushmaster in addition to Crawley with the name check in this episode. Bushmaster, Matt, a lot of people, when Harrow was announced as the identity for Ethan Hawke's character, were like, Harrow's a nobody in the comics. It's Raoul Bushmaster who's the real villain. Possible that there'll be something past just the name check here.
Again, possible. We're stuffing an awful lot into the next episode. I'm going to vote if we get Bushmaster, it's in a season two. Let's dive into our episode, Ra-Cap, and Pete, we're over there on Twitter, where we all took the tour of the asylum. How would people rate their trip to it? Broken Heart was 17.4%. Kind of Confusing got 4.3%. Smart Episode got 10.9%. And then All Heart got 67.4%. Some commentary here. First up from Noel Gardner at Noel Camille. Wow, this episode was so good and so deep. I still don't know what part of Chicago Mark or Fastos live in, but that's another conversation. I like, Pete, I believe Noel, a current or former resident of Chicago. So if anyone would spot phony Chicago, phonier than the backlot street where apparently Mark and family live, I think she'd be better to know than most. Noel goes on to say, I like that the afterlife is subjective and that Marvel isn't locked into one thing. This was reminiscent of the 8th episode of WandaVision, a replay of Mark's life and trauma. Though not said out loud, I think we definitely saw Jake. I don't think Steven is gone for good. The last episode is going to be jam-packed. Whatever happens, I feel episode 5 is my favorite and has been for every Disney Plus Marvel show. Pete, from Noel's Wow to Andre Yeager, Dr. Polo 1983, who says, all I can say is wow. An emotional episode. This was the best origin story of any Marvel character to date. We saw the birth of 3, possibly 4 characters in the same episode. Mark, Steven, and Moon Knight. I also believe we saw Jake in Harrow's office. The altar with the nose bandage had totally different speech patterns and mannerisms. This show just gets better and better. I reiterate, give Oscar all the Emmys now. Nominate him 3 times. 1 for each character he plays in Moon Knight. Pete, that's as profuse praise as one gets there.
Yes.
JT Atkins, JTA is me, says, this week we go inside our main character's mind to reveal secrets about his traumatic past, including English accents, his mom pounding on the door, and mom's tragic end. Also, bonus internal 2 character dialogue. Wait, isn't this Star Trek Picard? Says J.T. Atkins, which is funny because, Pete, we don't pre-read these comments before we talk, and off mic we had just said Picard this week and Moon Knight this week were oddly similar. Yeah. J.T. goes on to say, serious kudos for taking this kind of risk in a Marvel story. Sure, it's trippy, but not superhero-y, gut-wrenching, and artfully accomplished. Next, we hear from Rose Ferry, Anna Rose 584 on Twitter. Almost everything is clearer now, and I don't feel so lost. A great story and build to this episode. What will next week have in store and beyond that? Thanks to our fearless podcasters and this community for the insights and explanations I needed along the way. Pete, I want to reiterate something Rose said there, which I know I had discussed a bit in our reflection as well. In a certain level, in terms of like the story diagram of where we're at in the plot, things are more confusing now than ever. But I think we all feel that things are coming into focus in a really comforting way.
They have to. And I think the drift of the story to pull us back to the main timeline to understand where Harrow is in his quest to unleash Amit, that Layla's life and others hang in the balance. Not a damsel in distress, mind you. Still think she might wind up in the suit, at least for a little bit. They got to save the day here.
Next we hear from Jay Philly B. That's Jay Philly B for Fandom on Twitter. Only one episode left. Unpossible. I don't think Steven is truly gone, only his purpose. But now that their souls are balanced, Mark/Steven can pass Amit's test. Hoping to see Amit discover Harrow's broken glass footwear and that he's been cheating the scales all along. Hmm. Not expecting to see that third personality until after Mark/Steven do whatever they need to do to stop Amit. They have to keep that guy back until the threat is over. They really missed out on giving us a hi diddly ho, Steve Areno. What even is the point? And Pete, speaking of points, let's dial back here for a second. I think J. Philly B might be onto something here. Yes. That the broken glass footwear, I don't understand how it could be a cheat, but I could see it being explained in about 15 seconds and us all going, oh, now I get it.
We have to come back to that first detail we ever had for this world. So, yeah, I think it's got to be explained.
Darren Bell, that's at Darth Rastlin 79, says, wow. Pete, that's the third wow. Okay, this is all.
Wow.
There you go. For me, this is the best episode of any of the MCU shows. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. Generally, I don't really take into account the acting in these shows, but I thought Oscar did a great job. He's able to play these two characters and make them both believable. I feel like this episode was able to explain the origins of the characters really well, and was so sad to see Steven realize he was created by Mark. Hopefully we'll see him again. I've been completely wrong in my assumptions of the show and where it's going, so it's been awesome. Pete, we hear from LMD Mary, that's at Geek Kirk. With this exploration of Mark's past, this show pulls up equal in my heart with the love I have for WandaVision and its exploration of grief. I love that I never know what I'm getting from an MCU show, which again has been a common theme for us and our listeners that, you know, we don't know where this was headed, or where this is headed. Next up, Ben Larson, that's at Larson Ben on Twitter. It's probably against the rules for Oscar Isaac to get two Emmy nominations for this episode, one for Mark and one for Steven, but he deserves them. That was a masterclass performance. Cannot wait for the finale. Pete, some of these repetitions here are making me wonder if maybe some of our followers are multiple minds or something. So I don't know. Next, the wise Bob Keeley, that's our Keeley on Twitter, says a fine exploration of the inner life of Mark and Steven and an exciting and fascinating episode. I can't wait for the conclusion. We hear from Spider-Ham Lincoln, Tess LC139. I could have watched another hour of 105's magnificently told character piece. It was a brilliant look into Mark's mind, and one thing is clear. The Steven Grant persona is the hero of this story. He is Mark's protector. He's partially responsible for Mark's successes, and he basically sacrificed himself so Mark could live. I really hope we see more Moon Knight in the MCU's future. Six episodes of this character won't nearly be enough. We hear from Make It So, KCLYLE1 on Twitter. Very cool. Thought we might see Jake. Did not expect to see Grant sanded. Figured the three of them would join up to escape back to life. But we got an origin for Moon Knight and Grant. And Towerette was fantastic with the PH. Sad we only have one episode and it seems like a lot to pull together. But I seem to feel that way with every penultimate episode in these Disney Plus shows. So far, I haven't been disappointed. We hear from Beer Crusader. That's at Beer Crusader. Pete, I think a fight people could get behind sometimes. Episode 5 was great. Heroism at its finest. Loved the backstory. But wondering, was it Mephisto all along who murdered everyone back at the archaeological site?
Mephisto. I hear Mephisto was in the sarcophagus that didn't get opened.
And then Pete, the last tweet, the cruelest and the coolest from aka Frank Castle. It's at DJ_black357. Pete, it's been a while since we've heard from Mr. DJ. He says this. Are you ready, Pete, for the savagery of the wisdom? He says, I really enjoyed that episode of Legion, cough, cough. I'm sorry, I meant to say Moon Knight. Pete, Legion, mostly a blank spot on my Marvel TV resume. How about you?
David! That's all I'll say there. Matt, to the Facebook we go. Robert T. Frost writes into the Fantastic Geek Facebook page. Hello, Matt and Pete. I want to throw out a theory or two I have before the next episode, which I haven't had a chance to post until now due to Michigan spring showers bringing a wet basement and not spring flowers. I think there have been some subtle clues dropped lately about Layla. First, her father believed that gods walked amongst men. Second, her father called her Little Scarab. Third, Mark thinks that Khonshu may want her as his next avatar, as she obviously has skill and knowledge, so therefore potential. My theory, Khonshu wants Layla as his avatar not because of Mark or skills or knowledge, but to block Amit, who is the god who actually wants Layla as his, as her avatar. And perhaps Arthur Harrow is on his quest to raise Amit, knowing he will not be her avatar, but Layla instead. The whole conversation in the tomb last episode could be him sowing seeds and grooming Layla just for that end. Lastly, with Layla's father giving her that pet name, was he also raising his daughter to be an avatar of Amit, but got killed before he could put his plan in motion? It's a pretty dark theory, but we have been playing in the moonlight an awful lot. Tomorrow morning can't come soon enough. Till next time, your friend, Bob.
I really am attracted to the idea that in addition to this show being a mystery box of sorts, and not for nothing, even with just Steven, you know, if you watch the first 10 minutes of the first episode, okay, the show deals with dissociative identity disorder. We're going to get multiple characters, secret history, kind of all of that. But I love the notion that there's a different story underpinning all of this, and it's only going to be at the end, or at the end of the story, or somewhere in the sixth episode, where we say, ah, the real driver of things has been the fight over Layla, or something like that. That would be a really nuanced way to create not just a story, but a mystery story, in that, you know, we only find out the real structure to it at the very end. So I hope there is truth in that prediction.
Steve Adams writes into the Fantastic Geek Facebook page, episode 5 was a real emotional tour de force. It was very hard to watch Mark reliving his tragic accident, dealing with the aftermath, which eventually led to his mental break. Oscar Isaac's acting was superb, and Steven's final sacrifice was heartbreaking, if not somewhat necessary. It leaves me wondering if Steven is gone, or if his memories and experiences have integrated with Mark's. This was by far the best episode so far. I need to see how the series ends. So until then, stay fantastic.
I feel the loss of Steven. I think that it would not undercut that loss to have him come back easily, whether that's, you know, he makes his way out of the sand death, you know, or like, let's not forget, if Steven is a product of Mark's mind, I understand there's a certain quasi-literal representation where he's been taken to the underworld and can never escape, but can't another Steven be made? Which, Pete, also would be weirdly lining up with this week's Picard, where a character who's dead is kind of sort of copied. I'm just realizing that right now, but we'll leave the Picard stuff for tomorrow. I do feel like there's story room where Steven can just be back, no harm, no foul.
So next, Matt, we're going to hear from my Facebook friend, Brendan Hemmel. I'm friends with Brandon via a group on Facebook called A Wretched Hive. And so Brandon's son had done a project on Moon Knight for his bar mitzvah, and had gotten to asking him, had he seen this week's episode, what with the inclusion here of Mark's background as a once practicing Jew. something that comes up quite a bit in the comics. So Brandon was very straightforward, saying that he practices a very liberal interpretation of Judaism called humanistic Judaism, which looks at the practice and learnings from a non-theistic viewpoint. So many other Jews will probably not agree with him on items of teaching and tradition and law. And he joked here, he said, we can quote him as an expert on Jewish life. But pretty interesting. And really, Matt, what I was looking for was some sense of perspective. So I've seen some criticism on social media of this episode in terms of the presentation of Jewish life. The Shiva, for instance. So for those who are unaware, sitting Shiva is a practice kind of akin to awake. But, you know, there were things done in the episode that observant Jews were pointing out are inaccurate. For instance, the candles weren't lit, or other things. And then the scene with the yarmulke where Mark or Jake is wearing it and pulls it off and pounds it into the street, perhaps a little heavy-handed. You know, there were people who seemed a little disappointed, like, okay, here's a character who in the comics has this Jewish background, although Brandon, you know, had pointed out that he had renounced his Judaism in the comics. I don't have a ton of Moon Knight reading experience. I've read some. From what I understand, remember the character originated in the 70s. From what I understand, the father in the comics is a rabbi. There is no mother figure. The father is a Holocaust survivor. There's no hint at abuse or anything like that. But, you know, some people critical again, you know, did what they did with the Jewish background. Was it enough to live up to the idea that, okay, we have gotten an actor who has Jewish heritage. We are digging into the MCU's first character of Jewish origin, and did they do enough with it?
I can certainly appreciate the perspective that in looking for representation of oneself, you know, how one wants that to be presented completely and authentically. And certainly it's not my place to you know, nor am I coming from a perspective of knowledge to be able to say how authentic or inauthentic this presentation of Jewish life was. I think, too, I can give story reasons why those concerns, in theory, could be wiped away. For example, what we are seeing is from the unreliable narrator of Mark's head and all of that. So details like the candles, which perhaps one could argue were not lit because it was his revisionist memory or, you know, that sort of thing. However, I don't think that that would necessarily quell someone who is concerned about having full, authentic representation. I suppose time will tell as to how acceptable this character is in terms of fulfilling a desire for representation.
I mean, the point I made in my discussion with Brandon was the idea that this is an unfolding story. We're not done with Moon Knight. So, you know, there could be further exploration of his background, of his heritage. He went on to say that his basic sentiment as a counter argument, there are all kinds of Jewish practitioners, just as much as there are all kinds of Christians. Does it really matter if the scenes fit a preconceived idealistic notion of what a Shiva is supposed to be? The family already seemed broken. by the event and possibly prior, would it have been better if it was more canon accurate with his father being a rabbi? Maybe. Would it also seem more cliche if his father was the one who was abusive? Yes. So having the mother be the one rejecting him is a change, especially for the typical Jewish stereotype of the overbearing and overcaring mother. He also asked, was it implied if she had committed suicide? I missed that.
To my mind, it was not implied. Perhaps I would require, you know, multiple reviewings to kind of pick up on that subtext, but that's not the take I had. If one wants to say, well, her death seemed a bit out of the blue in relation to, you know, it not being in context of something else, I would agree. I think for story purposes, her end came as it does, for us all. And it seems like the episode was not interested in exploring the particular cause. Therefore, I will assume it was, a more commonplace end. Pete, I think particularly in this episode, exploring both the religious end of things as well as the far-fetched and the multi-plane and all of that, we're honored by all these comments that we've gotten, the conversations that we've had, you know, whether it's enthusiasm for the story or explorations of some of these deeper topics, it very much is appreciated there to be able to share each and every one of these pieces of commentary as part of the podcast dialogue. Certainly, Pete, hoping that the road is a long one ahead for this character as we continue to podcast the show in all sorts of places, including Apple Podcasts.
Speaking of the old Apple Podcast, Matt, a review left for us there by JTA is me. 5 stars, the headline, Be Confused No More. And it reads, want to enjoy Moon Knight more? Listen to this podcast. Such a trippy show needs the insight that only Fantastic Geek can provide. Check it out.
Very appreciative of those kind words there. Always great to know that we're getting some of those ratings and reviews over on Apple Podcasts, helping other people find what we do and sharing our joy of all these episodes. It truly, Pete, is a team effort.
And Matt, our team, the home team in particular, that of patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Indeed, Pete, we are so privileged to be listener-supported. It's about to be May, and the May and June corridor around the old podcast HQ is going to be a busy one. So the fact that some of those storage and bandwidth costs can be helped by our supporters is very, very appreciated. So our thanks, as always, for those who go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content, all sorts of levels to choose, but it only takes $1 to get you behind that door, all sorts of things to listen to check out. Can't contribute this month? Get yourself over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating in seconds. Leave us a review to any of our now 30 podcast feeds. Helps us immeasurably.
And Pete, let's keep the conversation going. How can people be in touch with you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R. 12,453 followers. Can't be wrong, Matt. I took a hit because of the transaction this week.
Interesting times over there on Twitter, and indeed on Twitter, I am looking back lost, but do be in touch with the podcast, comment on fantasticgeek.com. Check us out on Instagram and Gmail as well. See, Pete, lots of ways to keep in touch, regardless of who owns what service and so forth. And indeed, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/fantasticgeek with a PH, all one word, like it today.
On the Pop Culture Podcast feed, we are back tomorrow to talk to Star Trek Picard, and then that'll also be home base for our Golden Hours, Moon Knight 106, the finale, Picard 210, the season finale. So Strange New Worlds, the series premiere, and Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness and all of that. For now, though, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Here was little old me worrying I'd blow your chest wide open.